Welcome to the Uphill Athlete Podcast. These programs are just one of several free services we provide to disseminate information about training for mountain sports. If you like what you hear and want more, please check out our website, uphillathlete.com, where you'll find many articles and our extensive video library on all aspects of training for and accomplishing a variety of mountain goals. You'll also find our forum, where you can ask questions of our experts and the community at large. Our email is coach@uphillathlete.com, and we'd love to hear from you. We've been very pleased and, of course, gratified that our podcasts are being received so enthusiastically. We've had requests to enable a way for listeners to have a conversation about episodes. We certainly welcome this idea and want to encourage those of you who do want to do that to do so on our forum so that the whole Uphill Athlete community can join in and benefit from this exchange. To do so, please start a new thread on the forum using the title of the podcast under the most appropriate category. Thanks for being part of this community. Today we have a repeat visitor that I was able to corral into another session with me, which I think we're going to get to some really cool stuff today. This is Pete Dickinson. Pete is the staff physical therapist for Uphill Athlete. He is also the physical therapist that travels with the U.S. ski team's cross-country team, Nordic team, as well as the Paralympic Nordic skiers and the Craftsbury Green team, which is a semi-professional cross-country racing team. Pete and I go back 20-some years, and Pete has been witness to, quite a number of my either accidents or the surgeries that I've been involved in or had to have done to my poor body. And he's really helped me over the years kind of make comebacks from that stuff. And I know many of the athletes I have worked with as a coach have benefited greatly from Pete's expertise. And now that he's working with us at Uphill Athlete this past year or so, quite a few of our coaches have been sending the athletes that they have that get injured to Pete, who does virtual consultations with them. And he's just an extraordinarily gifted physical therapist, and feel really fortunate to have him on board. And I know that I wouldn't really be where I am right now in terms of my recovery status if it hadn't been for Pete on several occasions. So welcome, Pete. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, no, I'm really excited to do this. It can be a repeat with PT Pete. You know, when we live an active outdoor lifestyle, we don't get away without getting dinged up a bit. And it's a price we pay. But the benefits of outdoor activity and going uphill far outweigh any downside. So, and you're a testament to that. And I will say, I learned most of what I learned from my patients, and you have maybe instructed me more than a lot of them. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
By instructed, do you mean challenged you perhaps?
Well, I've learned from going through this process with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, I've learned a few things from you over the years, and I've certainly learned how not to do a few things. You know, and I've got more than my share of metal in my body to screws and things holding me together. So, but it's worked out well for me. I mean, I'm still cranking along at an advanced age. So I agree with you that the benefits of an active life like we've led really outweighs the maintenance. I'm kind of like an old car, I think. And every now and then I got to go in and get something rebuilt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Pete suggested that we talk about a really common injury that we see frequently. And you know, I've seen it over my career, both with myself, not so much recently, but with a lot of athletes, an overuse injury that results in tendon problems. And so I'm going to just turn the floor over to Pete and kind of let him do a deep dive into tendon injuries and then how he sees treatment has changed over the years and what he recommends.
Yeah, tendon injuries are fascinating, right? I mean, when it's when it happens to everyone, well, raise your hand if you've had a tendon injury. Okay, well, everyone's raising their hand right now. So when it happens to 100% of the population, it's a normal thing. What isn't normal is coming back from a tendon injury. They seem to be inconsistent in their path to improvement. And that's so frustrating that sometimes we don't know what is going to make this thing get better, or it takes forever. So I wanted to touch on that a little bit and flesh that out and maybe explain why that is. And then help guide this along, Scott. Well, then maybe a segue into some of the current treatments and how that's changed, because medicine changes over time. And I really want to touch on that, because we hold on to approaches and ways of treating things. But we learn as we go along and we adapt. So tendon injuries are known to, the research tells us that they fail conservative care, or they don't do well by a rate of 30%. So we like to get our treatments down to like the 95% level, where we know that with a 95% people are going to do well with a certain approach. Well, there's a 30% failure rate with tendon injuries. And there's probably some reasons behind this, because, first off, the subjects, we're all very poor subjects in how we rehab. I've coined the term OES syndrome, overenthusiasm syndrome. And so we overreach with our activities. We also have something, a 10% rule, where we can increase things by our activity by 10% and we'll adapt. But greater than 10%, we tend to react. And we've all been guilty of being really enthusiastic about a project, knowing we've got to reach this goal. We've got to increase our hours. We've got to increase the vertical that we've attained and in training, and we push it too fast. We get this overuse injury with the tendon.
You used to describe this, I know when I was a patient of yours, in a slightly less euphemistic way. I think you called me, and you called it the knucklehead syndrome when I was a patient of yours.
I've tried to elevate the conversation to OES, overenthusiasm syndrome. But those are just code words for being a knucklehead. And that comes with the endurance athlete, right? Because usually it's a very motivated individual. Endurance activity by and of itself trains you to, you have to endure a lot of discomfort. So it increases your pain tolerance. And the training does that. And it's a good thing. It's part of training. Changes our brain to tolerate more activity. We want that to happen. We want to have difficult sessions. But with people that are highly motivated with high pain resistance, we'll get into trouble and be a knucklehead. And my favorite parts of any treatment is hearing how people have been a knucklehead, because it's amazing, the stories. But we all have that. But everyone's an individual in how that injury is reflected in them. You have your prior injury history, which complicates things. Your age doesn't help. Genetics can help or hurt. Your gender, there's some tendonitises that are more in women and vice versa with men. And then we have, we call them the psychosocial or cultural factors with your response to injury. So we've got this whole milieu and that affects our response to injury. And that's why I think the one size fits all rehab approaches don't have a higher success rate. We talked about that 30% failure rate. So we've got a lot of different factors to put into the mix with that. So tendon injuries require this individual response. We have a saying in the field where when you hear the sound of hoofbeats, look for horses. But there are zebras out there too. And maybe that particularly applies to tendon training. So you need to come with an individualized approach. That being said, I think we give some general guidelines of what now we think works with it. Because remember, tendon training isn't physical overuse. But we can use physical activity to treat it. Now we've, maybe we'll segue into talking about what tendonitis is, or there are a bunch of different terms out there. There's tendonitis, tendinosis, and tendinopathy.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to hear the distinction between those. I'm confused by it. But before we move on to that, Pete, are tendon injuries almost always an overuse injury, or do you ever see them as a result of trauma?
Yeah. So, and a lot of us have had it, and I've had to try to have all these injuries. You can get physical pressure on a tendon. And, like if you have a big heel cup on your boot, say under the, and pressing onto the Achilles tendon, that often happens to us. And that'll damage the sheath of the tendon, and you'll get swelling in there. And you can palpate the tendon, and it'll actually be squeaky. It has the term squeak heel when it's the Achilles tendon, but we'll call it a tenosynovitis. I recently was working with one of our sit skiers on the paranordic team who has a spinal cord injury, so he can't really feel his legs in his sit ski that he's skiing with. These guys are just amazing. Be sure you watch the Paralympic races coming up. The fitting of the sit ski was pressing on his tendon. And he noticed it. He was really observant and noticed a swelling, and you could palpate from the pressure of the fitting onto his tendon, the squeakiness of that tendon. So it happens in varying locations. That's just one observation. But by far, I think you can also have a quick overstretch of a tendon, ballistic overstretching, overpressure, under resistance. But I think by and large, probably the greater majority is an overuse condition, the OES syndrome.
And I think that's probably what most of us are familiar with, especially runners. I mean, this is lower leg tendon issues seem to be, you know, something that almost every runner ends up dealing with at one time or another.
Have you ever, Scott, have you ever had an injury that, has come back, the same tendonitis has come back? Have you ever had any repeat?
I have. I mean, I kind of really only suffered two tendonitis issues. One of them, you might recall, I came to you for. This was, oh gosh, probably close to 20 years ago. And it was it was overuse. Obviously, it was running. But my left Achilles tendon was probably three times the diameter of my right Achilles tendon. It was really mushy and nasty feeling. And I remember you rolling your eyes. I mean, that was probably the first time you used the knucklehead term with me. And, you know, I had been like a lot of people, and I think this is what I'm hoping this podcast can help do, is, you know, trying to figure out a way to work around it or train through it and all this stuff. And of course, all I did was get worse. And I thought after what, you know, to make this thing get that swollen and feel as crummy as it, you know, it literally felt mushy. I thought, oh, I've ruined it. I mean, I may never run again once this thing finally heals. But I've never had a single problem with that again after that.
I'll circle back on that. Lucky. Because there's a reason maybe some of our listeners have had tendonitis that's come back, and it's kind of an important point. But you experienced swelling of the tendon initially. And then your tendon goes through, and that's tendonitis. And then you get a proliferation of extra cells and vascularity and nerve endings in there. It makes it thick. And then once that process has played out, then you have what you have, and we have to reshape the tissue through activity. And many of our listeners have gone through the same scenario. What we do like to do is catch it early in that process. And that's where your knuckleheadedness will get in the way, because you continue on trying to keep up with your training. But then that really exponentially delays your recovery. If we can treat things sooner in that continuum, it really shortens the amount of rehab time. And that's why these teams now put physical therapists on their travel teams, because we can be on things right away, treat it immediately, and the athletes don't lose training time. A lot of our listeners might not have a physical therapist to travel with them or be with them to catch these. So hopefully this will help them realize the importance of early treatment and to not continue on with the irritating activities once they notice their tendon is firing up.
I'd like to think I'm a little smarter about this now than I was back then. But I think this is probably this message of catching it early and doing something about it pertains, you know, everything from, you know, an illness to overtraining syndrome to overuse issues like this, that the sooner you recognize what's going on and take, you know, dramatic action for it, the quicker you're going to get back to it. And that's why I've, you know, written quite a bit about this type of thing in the books and on the podcast, on the website, because I've experienced it myself and I've seen so many other people who've experienced it and tried to, for instance, just trying to train through a cold and having it turn into bronchitis. And then they're out, you know, on antibiotics and out for 3 weeks. And, you know, and obviously this kind of thing too. And I think it's really a wise choice. It's hard to do that, as you know, to kind of put the brakes on when you're training and feel like training is going well, but it's a false sense that it kind of gives you a sense that you're actually progressing when in fact you're retrograding, you're going backwards with this if you don't take care of it.
Right, because you lose training time.
More training time, yeah.
You lose training time, that's the, that just kills us. So we want to, with an injury, recognize it. If you recognize it early enough, you just can just reduce training. Sometimes it's moderately impactful, and so you have to actually take a short rest. And we like you being really good about your rest. Take all the rest up front and don't dribble it out. Get it done. Stop doing things when injuries are really bad and we need to calm it down. So with tendons, we used to think it was a tendonitis, an inflammation of the tendon. And then science told us that, well, we're not seeing a lot of the biological markers for inflammation. Really what it is a degeneration of the tendon. And so we switched our calling tendonitis to tendinosis. Now we've kind of circled back and realized that, yeah, there is inflammation markers that we now see there that we didn't see before. So there is probably an inflammatory process, but there are fibers that go bad, that are degenerative. And our treatment approach used to be, first off, we used to inject cortisone into tendons and think that that would be a complete treatment. And tendons get better in the short term, but they also, you're also doing less activity. So you're taking rest and then ramping back up slowly. So that actually might be what's going on and improving things. We inject PRP, other sort of blood products in there to try to kickstart these degenerative fibers to heal again. But now I think our current thinking is when you have some degenerative fibers, they're just going to be kind of bad. And what we're really doing with our rehab is getting the good fibers stronger and to take the load. And so it becomes a training issue, a slow, gradual training issue to rehab. Whereas sticking things in there and doing all these more aggressive, invasive procedures are probably not serving you best, or if you do see some improvement, it's likely because you're resting and then building up gradually again. A lot of the blood product injections, they'll actually require that as part of their treatment. Well, yeah, we're treating it through activity. So tendon injury, remember, is a training error first and foremost. And so we can use proper training to rehab it. So what does that look like? Maybe we'll get into a little bit of that if I kind of cleared up some of the confusion of what we're calling.
Are you going to, this other word, tendinopathy, or we haven't gotten there yet, or?
No, good point. So tendinopathy kind of covers the basis of a tendon that's not behaving well, that is painful, has lost function. It can be swollen, it can be weak. But it covers the basis. So we like the term tendinopathy, but we know what you're talking about if you call it tendonitis or tendinosis. So, but things have changed, right? So in how we look at things medically. We've, you know, back in 1984, Kerwin and Stanish came out with this great paper showing how to, they came up with a way of treating tendonitis back in the day. And it was through eccentric strengthening. And so doing slowly lowering heel drops. And that was 1984. And that has really stuck with us. Now, recently, in the last 10 years, we've come out with some other studies that have shown actually heavy, slow resistance training gets equivalent, sometimes better, responses to that. And we've even done compare the two approaches with actually equivalent results. So that's telling me it's basically a training issue, using strength in a progressive fashion that is individualized for the person can have good results.
And is this newer method with using heavier load resistance training, is that done in concentric and eccentric directions?
Yes.
Or okay.
Yes.
Because the previous one was more eccentric loading.
Yeah, just eccentric. We thought could get really tricky. But as we know about coaching, about training, how we train someone, when you get kind of really specific in a certain type of movement or motion, that's really more for a specific training for an activity, for a sport. And that's usually further down the road than general preparation. So when you look at it in that perspective, you realize, yeah, they were getting some strength loads into the tendon, but probably not as much as the heavy, slow resistance training for that. So I think we can do better than what we did many years ago. And it was just a progression of our understanding of that. But you can't get caught up in what was done, right, 30, 20, however many years ago. In physical therapy, we've made a lot of mistakes along the way, or we've improved our thinking. We used to think you only treated kneecap injuries by strengthening your VMO. And I still get prescriptions for VMO strengthening, whereas now we know the hip is what controls the knee, and you need to take a more inclusive way of looking at it, as well as some fascial restrictions about the kneecap. What else? Never squat below 90 degrees, or don't go overhead presses, you know.
And what about, in this therapy, I'm sure you're going to get there, but I'm anxious to hear this, so I'm going to jump in and ask, in terms of giving direction to, let's say, this style you're talking about, which is heavy, slower resistance movements, at what level of pain should the patient be able to discern and limit themselves to?
I mean, that's a great question. That kind of speaks to the crux of it, because starting out, you're going to have pain when you have a tendon injury, and that pain can be caused from a couple different things. We said there was a neo-innervation response to a tendon injury, where you get more nerve endings in there. It's more sensitive. But we've got to get load on the tendon for it to change. There's a process called mechanotransduction. You load something, a tendon or a muscle, it creates this chemical response, and that leads to structural changes. So we've got to load that tendon. But we have this issue with pain. So say for an Achilles, we'll start off with calf raise holds for say like 45 seconds. That's actually, you do a single leg calf raise hold. If you work to a single, just on one leg, full body weight, that's a pretty good strength load. That's not inconsequential. And then we can start putting a backpack on people and doing calf raises with resistance. And we tell them how much pain is too much. You're going to have pain. You're going to have discomfort. We want you to be able to complete the activity. I like to see people not have pain afterwards. And maybe the next session, I don't want them worse. But if they're having pain later in that evening, that would indicate we would want to reduce the load in some way, shape, or form. And that's that individual response. Everyone's different. And it helps having some coaching going through that and to be chatting with someone. Because, again, we don't want to do too much. But if you go pain-free, you're not getting enough load to the tendon, and you're going to have an inconsistent response.
That's That's exactly what I was hoping to hear, wanting to know about. And that's good. That's good to hear. So we do need to tolerate some pain and discomfort during these type of rehab sessions. Okay.
So the load's important, what we want to progress to. You don't do it right away, likely. Just like in regular strength training, you don't try to put on. I wouldn't have a patient do 80 to 9% of their one rep max load if they're just starting out. You need to work into it just like anything else. But then we want to expose that tendon, if we can, to some like 8 rep max loads where they can do maybe 7 to 8 reps, but they have a couple reps in reserve, a couple reps in the pocket, we say, where they could do a couple more, but they are not going to be very happy doing that. That's significant load to that, and that stimulates a good response in the tendon. And then, because we're involved in sport, we need to continue the rehab into more sport-specific or dynamic activities, right? We want to get into some dynamic rehab, light plyometrics initially, going to more heavier plyometrics, and then shape it to their sport. You'll have poor outcomes if you don't try to get enough physiological load on the tendon to get it to respond. We also want to take care of the whole kinetic chain and also progress them into quicker movements towards the end.
And do those more dynamic or ballistic movements, do they start off in a non-sport specific or sort of semi-sport specific way and then progress to something that, you know, is very sport specific toward the end?
Exactly. It's training. Yeah. Remember, we want to take a training approach, but we just know that our training needs to be at a slower ramp. Maybe we have an injury and that it's going to take a longer time working through that. And it takes patience. That's why we fail at it all the time, because we, maybe one of the characteristics of us and our athletes we work with is we're not very patient. We want it pretty quick. I understand that. I get it. But the changes need to happen slowly over a period of time. So when we get into some more sport, we want to get someone moving quickly. Yes, it'll be very general. I'll just have people do heel bounces. Mm-hmm. Initially, and that's actually a very light plyometric, and then we'll sequence a ramp that makes sense to them and shape it towards what their more sport specific activities that fit them and who they are.
Well, the strength progression you just talked about, where a person is going to be ending up at, you know, 80 to 90% and 8 rep max type set, that's real on a student of strength training by the time you're up to do that. It doesn't sound to me like, you know, PT anymore. It sounds more like training. So you've progressed over a long period of time to get there. What kind of feedback, you know, if, let's say for someone who's self-treating, what kind of feedback should they be looking for in order to know how to accelerate or how fast to ramp up? Because I'm sure that's a big concern for most people is, you know, whether it's in that, you know, in the early stages where, you know, it's just, as you were talking, just heel raises to heavy load, you know, obviously progressing that way. And then maybe even more critically, when we start getting into these dynamic movements, so that I can imagine myself in that situation being a little tenuous to start jumping around, you know, if I'm trying to recover from an Achilles tendon problem, because I might feel like I would hurt it pretty easily. So is there a rule of thumb you could give for people, how they would monitor their recovery and how they would know how fast to progress?
Well, this is what all the strength coaches and other therapists will say. It depends, right? So that's where the individualized nature of this is. And so, but in broad strokes, strength is our essential element of fitness. And so if we can work on getting strong first, then we can add in other elements. When we're dealing, I'll just take either patellar tendon or Achilles tendon. We have the injury site that we can work with, but a lot of times that won't tolerate much load. And so we've got a bunch of other things that'll create load in the kinetic chain and won't overload that injury area. And so we can work the hip, we can do deadlifts, we can do other types of squats, and still stress that area to good effect, because we don't want things to get deconditioned. We can be spending some time doing some overhead activities, which is a big core. Anytime you get weight overhead is a big core activity. Or if you need to, if you're a climber, then doing some lat activity, grip strengthening can be helpful. So we can include other things in it. And sometimes it's best not to focus totally on the injured site, because we have this whole kinetic chain we have to integrate. It's so important neurologically that we don't just work on this injured spot. In fact, I won't go into that. There's some things we're doing to neurally integrate the limb in movement activity. So that gives us some other avenues to keep our activity level up and to do other things. And then as your strength starts approaching your other leg strength, you got another leg to compare it to, another ankle, another knee. Then you can start adding in some more dynamic activity at a low level, and then be progressing. And keep in mind that 10% rule. We can increase 10% in intensity, load, volume, and probably adapt pretty well to that. But then further increases we tend to react to. And then you'll kind of know once you get along that line, you'll know when you need more recovery, when you've overdone it, you're too fatigued, starting to see a little bit more pain. Don't hesitate. Rest is your friend. You build strength and tendon quality with load coupled with rest.
And this 10% ramp rate, would that be 10% per week, or how would you?
Yeah, that's a good point. Knuckleheads would say, I'm going to do 10% a day, from session to session, right? Yeah. So, but we know that, I think in a week or 2 weeks, 10%. When I'm thinking of how I ramp someone up on a walk jog program or something, 10% a week, or if needed, 2 weeks, depending on where they're at. And it depends.
And that's not too dissimilar to sort of a ramp rate or, training progression of almost any kind, whether it's strength or endurance. So makes sense. Yeah. The tissues are going to adapt at about the same rate that they would adapt. A healthy tissue and an injured tissue have probably similar adaptation rates.
Slower, right? The injury rate to return will be slower. But the tendon injury is usually a training error. So you got to get good at training to come back from it. And then know yourself, listen to it, because you need to take an individualized approach.
Yeah, that's the big trick for, I think, most of us is that part. And I think that, like in coaching, but let's say a healthy athlete that's training, it does help to have some expert eyes on the problem, or somebody to bounce these kind of questions off of, because we're, especially when if you have that knucklehead syndrome, which I think many endurance athletes, it's one of the qualities that makes them a good endurance athlete, is they're willing to endure, as you said, a lot of discomfort and pain, but they're probably not a very good judge of, when they're prepared to either, increase the load during recovery. They're clearly not a good judge of when to back off, or they wouldn't have this problem. And so, in those cases, I think it really pays off to have someone you can rely on. And I think that I'm going to encourage folks that hear this to, if they've got issues like this and they can't find adequate help locally, which there's not everybody, I can tell you, having dealt with a lot of physical therapists over the years. And my life, which has been more than I'd like to have gotten to know. It's kind of like, I'm sure I've put a lot of orthopedic surgeons' kids through college, that not everyone you're going to run across, or not very many of them you're going to run across, are going to have the level of understanding about dealing with athletes that someone like Pete does. And I would encourage folks to not be shy about reaching out to Pete. You can contact him through our website. We have an injury part of our forum, so you can pose some questions in there. And if it needs to be escalated to more of a consultation level, that can always be done too, because Pete brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to this whole thing, because he really has specialized in working with high-level athletes for a large part of his career.
And that I'll also make a plug, because if you have repeat injuries, there's a reason for that. And that's, tendon injury is a training error. And so that's where a coach can also really help you avoid that in the first place. Because they'll ramp the loads in a more continuous fashion, be progressive with loads and wave the loads, do all the things that we learn how to do as a coach. And so I've seen that at play at Uphill Athlete. So I'll reverse the plug for you.
I actually feel that in a way that's probably one of the most valuable roles a coach plays, is with the highly motivated athlete, is keeping them from hurting themselves. Being the one who says, nope, not today. When the athlete might otherwise be feeling guilty for not doing the training that was prescribed for that day. I see that all the time. And I think it helps to have somebody who's not as emotionally involved as the athlete is, somebody who can be pretty clear-headed about it, and who's seen the disastrous results of people who haven't paid attention to this. I know we have a strict mantra with all of our coaches, is that you do not try to train through an injury. Deal with it first, and then when the athlete has clearance from a doctor or a physical therapist to return to training, okay, then we can start thinking about training again. But it's very important to not. I feel like we, like you must have in the physical therapy world, we have our own version of a Hippocratic oath, which is first do no harm to the athlete you're coaching. And I think that's the most important thing we do, is don't screw up. Don't screw people up.
The other thing I'm really passionate about, what Uphill Athlete does, and it comes from the years of seeing a lot of injuries, is that you have a good strength approach. You have separate strength programs as part of your endurance training. And you're going to see less tendon injuries because of that, because your tendons are going to be strong. So you prevent a lot of this stuff from happening by having a good strength background. So you guys are doing the things up front, right, to minimize this as much as possible.
I'm getting old, so I don't remember these things very well. But didn't you and I address this whole strength and aging issue in one of our talks before? Because it's clearly, I know you and I are in the same age bracket now, and we've always been, but I mean, we're in the senior citizen age bracket, and strength training for people, over the age of probably 40 becomes, just increasingly important. By the time you get over 60, it's vital. If you're trying to do any sort of athletics, you need to be doing strength training, because it's as much for injury prevention as performance enhancement.
It's the one thing that also puts energy back in the tank hormonally too. So your fatigue resistance is so much better. So yeah, we can go on and on about the benefits of strength, but as it relates to the tendon, it's essential. We noticed that with our junior kids, that once we started them on a strength program year round, these are our athletes that move progress into the national team, that their tendon injuries evaporate. So you can really help yourself with a strength approach.
Great. Yep. Any final parting words, or are we done? I don't want to cut you off if you got some more wisdom for us. I know you have tons of wisdom in there.
I'm not sure how much wisdom. Most of this is from me having most of the injuries my patients have, so I can learn from it. I did make a comment of that sometimes we get some repeat tendonitises, and they come back. And I notice I have one in my elbow that It'll be terrible, and then it'll go away, and then it'll come back. And that's just a reflection of my good fibers around the tendon that aren't degenerated are nice and strong. But if I let them get weak, pain will return to the site. And then once I get back on my program and get strong again, the pain goes away. So that's just I think I wanted to make that point on this progressive strength and how it can help and help solve your tendon pain, but it can be lurking there. So you got to keep up with it.
Yeah. I think I might've even experienced that now that you mentioned it, these sort of, you know, mysterious injury or, you know, pain that comes back and you think, what did I just do? What have I done to myself? I don't think I've done anything that should have aggravated whatever that elbow or that, that knee, but then all of a sudden it starts hurting. And then sometimes it just sort of goes away by itself too. And these mysterious things. And I know that when you see people coming to you with questions like that, you're probably like the mechanic, or someone takes the car to the mechanic and the car's running perfectly, but then when they take it home, it doesn't work so well. It's pretty hard to diagnose those kinds of problems for folks. But that's really interesting about how it can come back, and that just means you need to be more diligent about your strength training.
Yeah, when you rest, you rot, and so you have to keep up with things.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to end this thing. Thank you. When you rest, you rot. I like that. Well, thanks so much, Pete. It's been wonderful to have you on again. And this is some great info for folks. I hope people can take it to heart and find some value in it and use it for themselves. But the first thing is, you know, stop training when you've got this problem. Don't try to pretend that you can train through it.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Scott, for having me.
You're very welcome. Good talking to you again.
All right.
Thanks for joining us today. For more information about what we do, please go to our website, uphillathlete.com.